Real people.
Real celebrities.
Real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday
head.
Morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Got a special guest in the building.
That's right. He probably had your grandma butt naked in a video at some point in his
probably
life.
Probably did.
Uncle Luke.
Miami's own Uncle Luke.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Or maybe just your mother. Ain't got to be your grandma.
Probably your mama. Your mama's.
I had mama's naked.
Damn right.
And maybe your baby mama, too.
If you're in the music business, especially if you're a DJ, I did have your mama in my
business. Oh, Envy, shots fired, Envy.
I did have your mama. Your mama was in my video. And she probably came to the back.
Grandma's, man. You 50 something, right?
54.
Yeah, grandma's, man. Grandma's
no, mama's. Mama,
your
how old
mom.
Is you 25?
No.
Exactly.
What you about?
35.
Oh, yeah.
So is this your mom?
Mama.
Hey, you gotta go home and check your old girl and say, hey, mom, did you ever go to a Luke show?
But listen, Luke still has them girls getting naked because my girl Gigi, she has a Club Vanity, and she was saying that Luke was there a couple months ago, and he made the girls do things they'd never done before.
Wow.
They had a, what was it? What happened, Luke?
I can't say that on the radio.
Yes, you can. Go ahead, Luke.
It was a eating train.
There you go.
You didn't have to use the word it's a vagina eating train.
Yeah. It was a eating train.
Okay, there we go.
A bunch of girls, like the caterpillar, like they all eat each other out walking?
Well, you have a caboose, and then you have, you know, the beginning of the train, and then the train just goes around the club.
Oh, you had a real train?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now that makes sense.
It's like a conga line.
Well,
but it was
let's start from the beginning. How did Uncle Luke get started? Especially with all this rated R stuff, because you was rated R.
You
got to
read the book of Luke, because let me tell you something. I read the whole book, okay? It was fascinating. I read it all in 2 days, and it really gives a whole history of Luke, what he was like when he was younger, his family, background.
Tell us now,
it talks
Luke.
About growing up in Miami, going to Liberty City, the politics of Miami.
Well, that's why Luke here.
Because, you know, we go to Miami all the time, but we don't know the history of Miami. So this book really breaks it down.
So it all started with a...
No, it didn't. Well, you know, we all came
we
out
We all
of
started
one.
That.
How did Uncle Luke and the Uncle Luke business start?
Well, I mean, basically, just like you say, I mean, in the book, I talk about, you know, the beginning of Miami, because just like you said, a lot of people come down there, but they don't know the history. They don't know Miami was 40% African Americans. They don't know Miami was built on the backs of the Bahamians, you know, and what you see right now ain't what it was before.
Right.
You know, we couldn't go to Miami Beach. We would have to be off the beach at 6 o'clock. You know, in this little area called Overtown, you know, you would perform on the beach, but then you'd have to stay there. So I kind of bring it in full fold of, you know, how, you know, I was taught by my uncle and by my dad, and, you know, what I became of after that, you know, as far as going through all the politics of things that I had to go through, going to the Supreme Court, you know, and just like everybody else, you know, I started out, you know, as a DJ. Mm-hmm. You know, I was interning at the radio station in Miami. And from that, you know, I learned the business that way. You know, brought down a little group, 2 Live Crew, and before you know it, you know, had to change what they did, because a lot of people, and I talk about in the book, a lot of people don't know 2 Live Crew probably was the first conscious rap group, you know, on one side of it.
That's not what they're known for.
Yeah, it was one side of it was goddamn Uri V-Lot, and then the other side of it was Chris. And Uri wanted to do conscious music. And then he, you know, once I said, hey, look, man, let's do this booty shaking music with a little bit of Dolomite in it. Mr. Mix was putting it together. He was like, nah, I ain't with that. You know, he's actually from, both of the guys are from Brooklyn. People don't really know that. Oh. You know, that these,
hey now,
yeah, these guys are from here. And that's basically how the group started. And before you know it, you know, I started going to jail and became the first person, you know, hip hop artist to go to Supreme Court. First.
They were pulling your record off the shelves in record stores and arresting owners of record shops for selling your record.
Yeah, because a federal judge, Gonzalez, he, you know, deemed my album obscene and said the album was obscene. And before you know it, you know, they start taking the records off the shelf. And then at that point, I was like, okay, well, I don't feel like that's right. So I went around the corner, did a show at this club named Frantura, and actually got arrested. Mm. So, you know.
What was the charge?
The charge was performing the obscene lyrics in a song.
You do know nowadays the stuff you used to rap about then wouldn't even be offensive at all to nobody.
No. Thanks to him going to Supreme Court
back then. And see, that's the whole thing. In this book, you know, because I feel like, you know, really, I mean, keep it 100, I feel like, you know, I'm the Rodney Dangerfield of the music industry. You know, nobody never told my story. No respect at all. I mean, nobody never told a story that, you know, I am the person who created hip hop in the South. There was no hip hop in
the
South.
You signed the first Atlanta artist.
You know, yes. I signed MC Shadi, and I talk about it in the book as well, you know, and all the different things, you know, that sticker you see on there, I created that
sticker. The parental advisory sticker.
Exactly,
he created that.
You know, because some people, you know, call up and say, look, the kids are getting the dirty version of it.
You
know,
and so that sticker,
you like the Jesus of offensive material. Like, you laid on the cross for everybody.
I laid on the cross and got crucified, and nobody want to give me no credit. So I basically say, look, you know, it's time to do this book. You know, I need to set the record straight. I need to let people understand this Miami that they're going to, this beautiful place. You know, how they displaced African Americans, how they did people. Mm-hmm. You know, I need people to know the history of the South. I need people to know the history, you know, of Luke Records, Two Live Crew, Pitbull, Trick Daddy, H-Town, all those groups that, you know, we recreated within that.
First time
that
I heard Pitbull label. Was on a Luke record.
Yeah. Yeah, he did with Lil Zane. Me and Lil Zane, the Lollipop song.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't deny H-Town either, Knocking the Boots.
First time I heard Trick was on a Luke record.
Yeah, that was Scarred.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I mean, I got him fresh out of jail.
But he couldn't sign to you, right?
Yeah, he was signed to me.
No,
I didn't sign him up because at that time I was going through the Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to make him property of the estate because he would have then been signed to somebody else. You know, I'd have probably lost him. So I kind of saved his career.
But at that time, I think you were the only Southern artist that got respect everywhere. I mean,
not
I
in New York at first.
No, New York, he would sell out the Tunnel crazy. When he came to the Tunnel.
But that took a long time because before that, you talk about coming to New York and other artists like Run DMC and Public Enemy not even wanting you guys to perform or open up for them.
Yeah, I talked about that in the book. I mean, because it was like we were the guys, you know, and I talked about, you know, when we would go to the New Music Seminar, you know, and the guy Hank Shockley was like, yo, this music is not going to do nothing. And then I hopped up and said, look, no, you know, this music, you know, the South is going to be a force to reckon with, you know, at the end of the day, because, you know, other Southern artists are going to take our lead and do certain things. So, you know, I just try and give everybody a good history lesson, you know, and I think anybody in hip hop, especially any Southern artists, they need to read this book, you know, and even talk about beefs. You know, you got beefs going on right now, which is rated G. They need to learn about how real beef went on. You know, when we had to deal with, you know, the fight with Snoop Dogg and Dre and all that and everything. So
how did that happen? How did you end up having beef with Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg?
Well, they made a record. Dre.
He said, I'll put my between your gap or something
like
that.
Yeah, all that. So then I was like, okay, all right.
Oh, that just came out the blue randomly? Yeah, they just decided
to
dish you?
It was this Suge Knight thing going on.
What was it?
He was beating up, he was touching up everybody, and I was like, nah, you ain't wrong guy.
He was doing that in Miami?
Well, no, he was touching up everybody.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it was like, yo, you gonna touch Luke up? No, you ain't touching me up, boss, because, yeah, I rap about this booty shaking music, but I did live that life.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I talk about in the book that ain't something I ain't proud of. You know, and I always tell people, you know, guys who lived that life, who went through that, you know, they don't be rapping about it. It's the guys who ain't lived that life. They're just telling the stories about other people who they looked up to.
What they seen, right?
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when they said that, then before you know it, and I, you know, in the book, we talk about those Jack the Rapper, the big fight, you know, the big gut fest and all that. You know, those are things that went on, you know, and right now today, me and Snoop and everybody, we cool.
Why did Suge Knight feel like he could just beat up people everywhere?
He was doing it.
He was doing it.
For what, though? For money? Like, he wanted...
Well, he was, you know, money. For him to be able to get his way, I guess.
Power.
That was very disrespectful, what Dr. Dre said. He said, you got a gap, too, so you know his dick can fit.
Well, and then everybody got touched up at Jack the Rapper.
Oh, y'all jumped on Dre though?
Oh, everybody got touched up.
Damn.
Oh, you got to read the book.
I got to read the book.
Yeah, you did. Listen, let me tell you something.
We touched up everybody now.
Yeah.
We ain't, no, this ain't no Meek Mills type thing. No,
305.
You go, hey, look, you diss one of the guys down there. You diss me, then you got a whole city coming at you. Wow.
I can't believe they would do that. You can't invite a man. You can't tell a man to suck my penis and then come to the man's
and
city.
And then come to Atlanta. You don't supposed to go nowhere near the South. Don't go to, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I guess that was back in the days. That's how we deal with it back in the days.
Now, what about French Montana? Because I heard when he sampled your record, you didn't like that too much, and there was a problem with that.
Yeah, I had a little issue with that because I felt like, you know, out of due respect, if you're going to put that much of my voice in a song with me still living, you know, I'm not dead.
Right.
You know, you should you should call me up and be like, hey, look. But the way they kind of did it was kind of, you know, kind of interesting, because at that period of time, I had did a column in the newspaper that I do columns with, about all these rappers living in Miami, you know, the Lil Wayne's and all those guys of the world, mm-hmm. that they need to start giving back to the community or be involved in the community. So it was a little bit of beef with that.
It's like, you know, enjoy our beaches, you enjoy our women, you enjoy our clubs, now give back to the community.
Yeah,
as well.
If you're going to live here, you know, you need to do things in the community. And so they didn't tell me the song. They asked me to come do this video like it was like Memorial Day weekend. They didn't tell me about the song. They didn't tell me who's in the song. But then I saw online that it was this Luke and Rick Ross and French Montana new song. And I was like, what is this? So, you know, I kind of got a little bit upset about it and say, hey, look, man, you know, y'all got to have more respect for people. You know, I don't know what's going on in this new hip-hop business, but in the old business, if you was going to sample somebody's music, you
would go
holler at them. And that much, you know, if you sample it, that's cool. But then, you know, let me know. Let me hear the song or something.
Let me endorse it, at least.
Yeah,
let me hear it so
there,
I can
like,
be on
I
your
just
team.
Did a record. Exactly.
You know what's interesting?
Did you get paid?
Well, I got I did get a check after I had a conversation with Puff Daddy.
Okay.
You
yeah,
talk
that's
about
my friend.
Yeah, that's his.
Yeah.
He did the right thing.
Yeah. You know,
well, you could have sued him if he didn't. I mean,
well, I was ready to sue everybody.
Right. You but you talk about getting endorsed, you know, calling people up and saying, I want to use your record. Interesting story in the book, Bruce Springsteen, when you did Band in the USA.
Yeah, I talk about that. I mean, because back then when I was going through that, unfortunately, people don't know. Nobody in the hip hop industry had my back. Guys like Salt and Pepper, you know, you name it, Kid and Play. The girls.
Yeah. Salt and Pepper. You said guys like Salt and Pepper.
Groups.
Salt Pepper's a big
see,
girl.
See, there y'all
come
go.
On,
see, that? Boy, you got really be on your toes up in here, boy, with y'all. Well, no, them girls, the girls, yeah, they're my friends. They good now. But, you know, they all came out against us. You know, oh, man, this is the worst thing in the world. They need to stop this. This ain't hip-hop.
They push it.
I know, right? I know.
You got to think of the time, though. The time Uncle Luke had naked women.
So what?
He was the first. He was the first person to do it. And sometimes when you're the first person to do something, it is different for people and hard for them to embrace it.
Yeah, they didn't understand. You know what I'm saying? And so everybody, I just knew everybody was going to come to my defense. The Russell Simmons, everybody of the world. But everybody basically was like, kill him. Kill him off. You know, get rid of them. And it kind of blew my mind at that time. But then, like I said, you know, the first person that stepped to me, that came to me, was Bruce Springsteen. And I talk about it in the book. You know, he's, you know, old white guy. You know, and I'm thinking about doing this song, Band in the USA, which is Born in the USA. And he was like, nah, I'm with you. Wow. You know, I understand the struggle. And so, you know, I ended up doing that song with his blessings and having a nice conversation
now,
for free.
Did you get Bruce some free? Did you put him on some of them Luke girls?
No, we needed Bruce to, you know, Bruce. Bruce probably was on them Viagra pills back then.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that to Bruce. Come on, man. What you want me to do to Bruce?
Yeah.
You want me to corrupt Bruce Springsteen?
Yes.
The all-American white boy?
Absolutely.
I can't do that.
The universal, though. Everybody, like.
Can you stop saying, can you say vagina?
Okay, everybody,
you can't
like,
say
vagina.
That word.
It's universal.
You're supposed to say pussycat on the radio.
Pussycat. There you go.
Yeah, the pussycat.
Now, tell Charlamagne about Sacrifice Weekends. This might have been something he would have loved.
Was this some Illuminati?
Kind of.
Sacrifice Weekend.
I know. Sacrifice Weekend. See, she read the whole book. Let me tell you, it was this weekend we used to do with my friend Ron May and Mark Caesar and all us. We would have this crazy, you know, we was just like, it's Sacrifice Weekend. And so, you know, at the end of the day, we would go in and the girls would get on my yacht and we would go out into the ocean and they would be like, sacrifice me. We just was young, crazy people.
You was never married, huh?
No.
Okay.
No. I got. I knew not to get married at that time. I would tell girls, look, I'm not ready for this. You could just be my friend if we got a, you know, I like multiple things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
You but
know,
sacrifice
God bless
me.
You, Uncle Luke,
tell him about, tell him what it meant when you got sacrificed.
When you got sacrificed, you know what we did? We drunk all kind of great champagne, good liquor and everything. And then we did golden showers on everybody.
Just peed on all the girls.
Yeah.
Damn. I ain't mad at you.
That was a wild time.
It was wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, we. And then
what'd you get out of that?
Then
though?
We drop them in the ocean.
But you wash them off.
Drop them in. We put a life vest on them and drop them in the water and then bring them back in the, out of the water.
What'd you get out of peeing on them?
I didn't. I was always the instigator. Man. I instigated everything. Like, I the club in Philadelphia. Like, I come in here. If you had the girls in here, we'll have them dancing on the county.
I didn't bring nobody grandma this morning, man.
No, they're everybody's daughter. They find me.
You didn't ever feel bad, like, man, I'm just peeing on this.
Was you ever, like, a certified pimp? Like, did you ever consider yourself a pimp?
Pathologist, three steps higher than the gynecologist.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's T.K. Kirkland told me that. That's what I was.
That's a bad man, Danny.
Yeah.
T.K. Kirkland.
Yeah. Pathologist. You know, you gynecologists are here.
Did you ever, like, get girls off the street, like girls that wasn't doing too much with themselves, and you was like, you know what, I can put you on your feet, help you get in the game the right way?
Yeah, majority of the girls that dance for me, you know, it was all of them are entrepreneurs right now, mm-hmm. even though they were taking light bulbs and putting it in their vagina and lighting them up. You know, they end up, you know, becoming nurses and makeup artists. Yeah, I always, you know, even right now today, if I go to a strip club, I have a conversation with a girl, you know, about where they're at in life. You know what I'm saying? You know, hey, look, just do this for the time being. So it's all about empowering even the girls in those situations. Because a lot of girls, you know, they don't want to be there. Yeah. They just got to be there.
Mm-hmm. Proper management. That's what it's all about, man.
Exactly. You got to have proper management.
Would y'all stop saying that word? So we don't have to keep editing.
He keeps saying it.
You're leading the witness.
Now, you ever go to the club and you see an old thing that you had and they come back. And
man, nobody grandma better be in the club right now, man.
And they don't look as good as they used to. He's like, why did I ever do that?
No, no. Actually, let me tell you. I would see them in the grocery store every now and then.
Right.
Damn. You don't look too good right now. Yeah. But not necessarily the strippers. I didn't get down with the strippers.
I bet your Facebook inbox popping.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it is. You already know.
I know.
With them naked pictures and
yes,
them old people.
Yes,
yeah. I'm like, what is this?
Remember me?
Exactly. Did y'all ever squash the beef with Wayne? Because you said that you was mad that Wayne and them wasn't giving back. Did y'all ever speak?
They said y'all was down there blowing up cars and all kind of stuff, man.
Oh, it got a little serious. Mm-hmm. We didn't really speak. You know, I talked to some of the guys, you know, with them, because some of the dudes that hang out with them are guys who I kind of was raised up with.
Right.
But, it was like, yeah, these dudes ain't going to be here too long. They're going to clear it anyway. So, you know.
Did you feel really disrespected when he
No.
said that? Okay.
I didn't feel disrespected at all. It was just me telling them, look, I don't care whether you're in New Orleans or wherever you at. I mean, that's the problem with a lot of hip-hop artists right now today. They don't feel like they got to be involved, you know, in the political process, in the mm-hmm. community and all that. I mean, we all did that. I mean, you had Rock the Vote, Rap the Vote. We all got involved, whether it was Cube or Russell Simmons or anybody. These guys don't do that nowadays, and they need to do that. They don't mm-hmm. know the power that they have because right. all these young people from 18 to 25, they have a voter's registration card because they got it and they voted on Obama. So just the mere fact that you just go and say, look, you know, we're going to vote you out. You need to give schools better education. You just don't know. Them politicians crap on themselves. I mean, I do it every day, you know, because, you know, we have a block of voters down there that we put guys in, you know, like one of the kids I talk about in the book, one of the kids came up in my program, Keon Hardiman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the commissioner of that whole area right now, Overtown and everything. Young guy, youngest commissioner, sitting commissioner, you know, in the state of Florida. And this dude is doing big things. He mm-hmm. beat everybody who had twice the amount of money that he had. You know, he's fresh out of college, went to FAM, got his law degree, practiced one year at the public defender's office. And we was like, nah, you that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and we could do that around the country. That's how you save your community, and that's what I think people need to know.
Your youth program has produced a lot of, like, big-name athletes and just people in general. Do these guys ever kick back something to you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, out of my youth program, Liberty City Optimists, you know, we got, you know, it's going on 25 years today. Not today, but 25 years. This is our 25th year anniversary. We got kids that came out of the program from Chad Johnson and Antonio Bryant. Right now, Duke Johnson, who plays for Cleveland Brown,
mm-hmm.
Devontae Freeman, you name it, Darrell Estridge, who played for the Jets, Levante Davis, who played the middle linebacker for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, we got kids all over the country that came out of my youth program.
So you get free tickets, all kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, people, and that's crazy because most people think Snoop Dogg was the first one to start youth football. And I mean, I did it 25 years ago.
You were at University of Miami, heavy, and they kind of had an issue with you being there.
Yeah, I talk about it in the book where I paid players. You know, it was, let me tell you.
I don't think you're supposed to admit that you paid players.
Well, I said it in the book.
Oh, okay.
But it's a reason why.
You ain't say the player's name, though, ain't
it? No, I ain't say it.
But yeah, tell the reason why. Yeah.
Reason why, you got to understand, people don't know. Even back then, right, him the rapper in town, I'm the big guy. You know, I'm the successful guy, right? And I'm sitting there looking at the TV every day, these dudes breaking in other students' rooms to then, you know, get money. They got kids at home. Because a lot of these kids right now that play football, they go to these colleges, they have kids. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't know that. And so then when they get to the college, you know, they can't get a job because that's illegal. If you play football and basketball, now if you play tennis and golf, you can get a job. You know, so these kids were hurting bad, and I just didn't want to see them ruin their life by, you know, having this opportunity to be able to get an education, education, using this football thing. So, you know, I would go down and be like, look, man, if y'all got to go do that, just call me up. You know what I'm saying? Before you go rob somebody, and they would tell me their story, look, I don't have no shoes. I don't have no clothes. I got to send money home to take care of my mama, you know, and she's getting put out. I mean, it was.
And these schools are making all this money.
All this money. I mean, one kid, Lamar Thomas, you know, he's a coach down at Louisville. You know, he was in college, and his mama was getting put out of her house, you know, and I ended up, you know, have to help her pay her mortgage.
That's how you get your blessings, though, man.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the thing is, and when he made it in the league, he then, you know, paid me the money back. But this man's mama was getting put out of her house, you know, which is incredible. And this kid is sitting in school, and he's like, man, I'm going to have to leave to go in and go to work to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm like, nah, I ain't. So if they want to persecute me for that, fine, so be it. I'm not about to let no kid commit no crime and do those type of things.
It's almost like they put kids in a position to mess up their opportunity.
Yeah.
It's like you give them the scholarship, but then they can't make no money. And then if they go out and do something stupid, then they end up losing their scholarship, going to jail, something dumb.
And
like
then
that.
They're stupid, they ruin their life. But no, there's a lot of things going
but there's
on.
Nothing they
could
do, yeah.
Yeah, when the guy plays for Ohio State, he goes and get a free tattoo, and then he gets suspended. He has to then leave school early, can't get a degree, then goes into the NFL, the craziest thing in the world, and the NFL penalized him. Because he's a kid and somebody paid for his tattoo, which is bananas. I mean, and so I talk about all these different things in the book.
Has your football team ever played Snoop's football team?
And beat the dog shit out.
did you ever have to say, remember what happened to Jack the Rapper too?
Yeah, we beat him 2 times.
You know, you guys are both Cowboy fans. Because Uncle Luke.
Oh, you a Cowboy fan?
Die hard, baby.
How far back you go? Let me check
your Cowboy. My father's a Dallas Cowboy fan, so I ain't got no
okay,
choice.
Okay, well, I had to talk to
him. I remember Tony Dorsett. And,
okay, see, that's how far you go back.
Yeah,
I go back
Herschel
with
Walker.
Clint Lonely and Jeffro Pugh and all of them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's
about
my time.
One of the first African-Americans that was drafted out of historical black college, went to the Cowboys, what his name was?
I don't know.
See, there I got you. I'm going to educate you. Bob Hayes.
Okay. What school did he go to?
He went to FAMU.
Okay.
Bob Hayes, one of the fastest men in the world. Yeah.
How you a Cowboy fan in Miami, man? I'm from South Carolina, so it don't
matter. He talks about it in the book and why he is. You should read it. He'll tell you all about why.
She wants you to read.
I'm gonna read the book anyway. A lot of niggas don't read.
and that's what we need to change.
Yeah,
that's what we need to change, and that's why, you know, everybody was like, "Well, you need to do the audio book." I'm like, "No, I want people to go and read first. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Read the book because I can give you audio book and you be, you know. But anyway, going back to the
Cowboy, how you been Cowboys, a Cowboys fan?
Because the Dolphins, I just did not like them. I thought they treated black players wrong. I mean, I read a book about Don Shula when Don Shula was the coach at the Baltimore Colts at that time.
Gotcha.
And then he then ended up in Miami. And some of the players on the coast thought he was racist. And then when he started coaching down there, I thought he was a little racist as well. He used to run the black guy all the way, Mercury Morris, all the way down to the goal line. And then he would bring in Jim Kick.
To score the touchdown. Lord have mercy.
And then, you know, and Paul Warfield, and, you know, he's running around, you know, catching balls, and then you bring in the white guy.
So when you saw the Super Bowl last year, you knew they wasn't giving it to Marshawn Lynch then?
No, I knew that.
Yeah,
because that's the game. And you would think, they wanted him to be the hero.
Yeah.
Because they know, that was an easy pass. You know, I coach high school football right now, and that was an easy pass to make, but the guy ended up breaking on it. But they want the quarterback to be the hero. But then at the end of the day, look how crazy football is even right now. Here we got a quarterback in Miami, this guy Tannehill, he gets $100 million, and this guy done been to the Super Bowl back-to-back, and he don't get nowhere near the same amount of money that he got.
Yes, sir.
So, we're still living in some crazy times.
Do you feel like you don't get the respect you deserve as an artist because you weren't a quote-unquote traditional rapper? Because, like your style kind of fathered, the Little Johns of the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You wasn't, like, a MC.
Right.
You think that's the reason why?
Well, it's more so the record label. I wasn't a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I was much more of a hype man. I got the part. I was more of a DJ than a rapper. So as far as the respect in that aspect, mm-hmm. I can understand. I'm not a rapper. I'm not Eric B. and Rakim. I'm not going to sit up here and be like, okay, well, I need to be spoken about like Cube or any of those guys. There, them dudes are rappers. I fit, with the Two Live Crew as a hype man.
Right.
I did Chance, Call and Response, things like that. Only the issue that I have with the industry is not giving me the same respect that they gave Craig Kileman, Jimmy Iovine, and all them other worlds, because they came up the same way I came up. I remember sitting in the office, in Doug Morris' office, when, it was Jimmy Iovine, Craig Kileman, he had a little record company in Chicago, and he was selling a few records, and, he was the next guy, and then Jimmy, he was doing his thing, and I'm sitting on the couch at the same time, but I was selling records,
mm-hmm.
And down in the South, when nobody wouldn't give me a deal, I had to sell this stuff out of the trunk of my car. I had to go and make the records at the pressing plant myself, and here I'm doing gospel albums, I'm going gold and platinum on R&B albums, and not just Two Live Crew, because I felt, I'm not going to get the respect as an executive if I only got this type of music here. Mm. So I got to be a little more versatile.
Gotcha.
So that's what made me do the Poison Clans, made me do, Find the Pit Bulls and do the H-Towns of the world. So in the respect of executive, no, I don't get no respect.
Are you mad you didn't get a piece of Pit Bull, man?
Huh?
Are you mad you ain't get a piece of Pit Bull?
I signed them up, and I let, it was difficult when we brought them out. When I brought them out, at the time I was going through all this. I didn't have the same passion, that I had. I could have gotten an override, but I don't think nobody should get no money off of nothing that they ain't working for.
Absolutely.
Me and Pitt right now today, that's like my son. Everything that he do, a large part of it I taught him. Mm-hmm. Here's this kid. When you read about him in the book, he was not a nice guy.
I used to come to Miami around 2001. He used to be with Luis Diaz them.
He
was riding around a little, I think it was like a little Saturn. He was a hood.
Yeah. No, that was after I discovered him. When I discovered him, he was straight out the street of Opa-locka.
Gotcha.
Guys be talking about, oh, man, this dude is corny. No, Pitt is probably one of the best rappers that I've ever heard freestyle in my entire life. Mm-hmm. Just like go off the top of the head. He just fell into what he's doing right now.
And he took it.
Yeah, he is no joke when it comes to freestyling. He will dissect you in a minute.
Do you like the evolution of Miami music? Do you like where it went?
Where it went? I don't like where it's at right now because there's no sound. I don't think the DJ Khaled's and the Rick Rosses of the world are not putting on enough artists from Miami. I had the record company. You would never heard about Pitbull. Here's a kid from around here, Trick Daddy. You know what I'm saying? Poison Clan, JT Money. All these guys are from Miami before I started signing groups like Bust Down in New Orleans and people like MC Shotty. Them. Mm-hmm. I put them guys on in our neighborhood.
Right.
And these guys, now that you got the light and you got the mic, you got to put these guys on. It's a whole bunch of kids down there like, Yadi, YD, and you have Blaze, and it's a stupid amount of kids. But then what I started thinking about, I was like, well, they go put the Meek Mills and all these guys on in the world because they can never claim Miami If you get another guy, if I go sign a guy from New York and I'm the big guy in Miami, if I sign another big guy in Miami, another kid in Miami and blow him up, then he's going to take my shine.
Right.
He's going to be the big guy in Miami. So I start thinking about it down that line, but I hopefully those guys start doing it. Other than that, they're just going to force me to get back in the business because there's too much talent down there.
What should we put out? Gunplay? Gunplay just came out.
Yeah. But Gunplay been there for a minute, so hopefully he do good.
What's your relationship with Khaled and Ross?
It's okay. You know, I got good. You know, I always, a lot of people think that, you know, like, I go hard on them. I speak from, you know, I'm the uncle. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to give them constructive criticism, you know, about doing the right thing. I mean, I got a good, I mean, Khaled is a guy that, you know, I discovered on my radio show. He was a DJ.
Right.
You know, we brought him on the Luke show. I had a little show on Friday nights on the radio because they never had a mix show in Miami. And I was like, man, I'm going all over the world. They got mix shows. You know, I'll go do it. And then, you know, all these guys from Khaled to Papa Keith, you name it, they were on the show to DJ Irie and all of them. So I'm proud that, you know, they were able to develop a career through that.
Right.
But, you know, I'm okay with them. You know, still, I think they all need to do a little more in the community. I just think they need to get more involved.
You once said Rick Ross could end up like Biggie. Do you still feel that way?
Those beefs.
Yeah,
and he chilled out. You know, he had too many beefs going on. It was too much going on.
Right.
You know, you riding down the street and you sitting at the donut shop and they shooting your car. Mm-hmm. I did not want to see that for him, you know, because I was me and Big was good friends. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my dude, and I just did not want to see that happen to him. You know, so you know, just do your music, man. Don't worry about all these dudes.
How'd you and Big get so cool?
Me and Big was cool. I mean, because when I used to come here to New York, this guy used to find me. And we used to hang out. I mean, one thing.
You know, you had them hoes.
Yeah. And one thing that was shocking, when me and him talking, I know that, you know, I vibe with him because I don't really vibe with too many people. Mm-hmm. When he told me one of his favorite groups was the Poison Clan, and he started reciting JT Money lyrics, you know, life's a bitch, so why marry one? He was like, man, that's some of the dopest shit I ever heard. And so we ended up becoming friends every time he come down to Miami. We'll hang out. You know, I put him in a few orgies and everything. And we get on the boat. That's why when he did the song, it was like his lyrics was deep throat on Luke boat and all that. Yeah, so, I mean, we would have fun. You know, that was my man. And even going through all that Pac and Biggie thing, I mean, you know, just having those conversations with him, he really felt bad about all that.
Were you ever scared about STDs or anything like that, man? Because you lived a wild lifestyle.
Well, it's called condoms.
Oh, plus, you said you were the instigator more than anything.
Yeah, it was condoms. I mean, my first couple years in the business, I was wilding out. I was a freshman in college.
Raw Dog King.
No, not Raw Dog.
Try to make him say that.
And after the first couple years, I was like, you know, I got to run the record company. I got to go back to the office. These dudes here, y'all can do your thing. And I just, you know, and then I started seeing the wild stuff that girls would do on stage and that they would do backstage. And it kind of made me like, yo, I got to be careful. You know, I'm going to be picky about who I even mess with, you know. And so I was totally opposite of what people thought I was. They thought I was just getting it in.
Well, at first, everybody kind of was.
I'd have made sure you was, you know, you'd had them and they would have just did whatever you know what I mean? You'd have been taken care of.
Do you still have that kind of power, sir? I'm sure you
do. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
He's a married man now, though, Lou. He doesn't want that no more.
Why I didn't do your bachelor party?
I ain't even have one.
Oh, you really married?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got one of them kind of married.
He might have not got married if he did his bachelor party.
He got one of them kind of married.
You better not have no bachelor party.
Okay.
It's so funny you said that because I remember when you had your reality show, you did not like your wife's bachelorette party.
No, I didn't like it.
We can't have that kind of fun now.
How did you convince a woman to marry you?
Hey, man, you know, that was the thing, right? You know, my wife, Kristen, and she listening to it. I mean, that was the thing. It was like, I know who I am as a person. I know who my mom raised. You know, I went through my time. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, when everybody in this room, you
damn got right.
your first success and when y'all got Hollywood at the beginning, y'all just popped off and you know, I did that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole thing, I know who I was and it was it was great to know that women that I did like and I talked to, and they were like, oh, I don't want to be bothered with you because I know y'all rappers, y'all just wild, and I know y'all, you know, you freaky man and all that. And I would be like, no, I'm not like that. And then I always knew that the woman that I would end up marrying would see me as a person, not much so the business, because if you saw me from the business standpoint, that means you want me because of the business that I'm in. You don't want the actual person. So, you know, I got lucky, you know, and got my wife. We've been married for 7 years, and I'm lucky. You know, we work.
She didn't ever question nothing. Like, I seen that video of you in Japan letting six girls suck you off on stage. I don't know how I feel.
No. She ain't questioning that.
Well, she don't question it now, though. Yeah,
it's in the book. No. I'm sure she read the book.
No, she questioned me. One time she questioned me.
For what?
I was going to the Hip Hop Honors show, and this reporter, this young light-skinned reporter, came up to me with a microphone, and it was like, she was like, oh, so Luke, how you doing? And who is this? And then at that period of time, she thought that I was actually sleeping with that reporter.
Who was it?
Really?
It was Angela Yee?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I never heard this story before.
I told her I'm doing an interview with, anytime I'm doing an interview with Angela Yee, she do a double take.
That's crazy.
That was you? You was the reporter?
Yeah.
She was like, are you so find out Angela Yee smash Luke?
No, we didn't do that. Never.
No, that's my buddy. Angela Yee like my
He tried to get me to do porn at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't she be good as a porn star?
I don't know.
No.
Nobody wants to see that here.
That's y'all sister.
Nobody wants to see that.
Before y'all started working with her, y'all would have been right there at the computer.
Luke Wilbur, he did make me think about it for a second. He was like, you ever thought about doing porn?
And I was like, you never get into porn full time.
No. Let me tell you.
At the Peep Show.
I went to a porn set one time. And I was like, this ain't for me.
It's disgusting?
Oh, it was disgusting. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like women just sitting around waiting to get knocked down.
That sounds like a Luke party.
Yeah, it sounds like,
it sound like a Luke party.
No, a Luke party is like a Luke after party. Spontaneous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
fun, champagne's flowing, music's playing.
Everybody's in the moment.
Like, don't tell me you're going to f*** me type stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you did not come here for that, but you found yourself up there on stage and doing things that you didn't think you were going to be doing because you got saved by Luke.
Oh my gosh.
That's why the name of the book is the Book of Luke.
The next book is going to be called Saved by Luke.
You know, you got the Book of Luke
in the Bible. Yeah. I feel like for comedy purposes, man, just one last time, you need to get all the old video chicks you had from the early 80s and do one last
shut
video.
Shut up.
Who wants to see that?
Well, I'm telling you, man, for comedy purposes, man. Because a lot of them ain't doing nothing. Go on your Facebook.
I know, right?
Get about 10 or 15 of them and just do one last one for comedy
purposes. Let me tell you, the original girl, Cindy. Cindy had the big butt, and that's everybody. She just changed the whole world. It wasn't Buffy the Body. It was Cindy. And right now today, Cindy still has shaped like a Coca-Cola with that big butt.
How old is she?
Oh, she probably about 50.
What's her Facebook?
Stop. Are you Googling?
M-U-L-L-I-N-S?
This guy.
Cindy Mullins.
All I see is a bunch of white people, man.
No, this is a black girl with a big old ass.
All right, well, the Book of Luke is in stores now.
Make
so,
sure you,
you
get
know,
it.
I read it, so I highly recommend you get it. You can learn about Luke as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, as one of the first people, really, an independent label owner, and just everything that went on with Luke. It was a lot.
Yeah, I want people to, you know, people to know that the book is not like, you know, it ain't no just straight wild party. It's real deep, you know, and people can, you know, use it as an educational tool to understand, you know, how, you know, the South was born as far as hip hop, and as well as, you know, the different trials and tribulations I had to go through and what people will go through in life. And if you got dreams, you just, you know, do what you got to do, you know, and whatever you stand for, just stand for it. Don't fall for anything.
All right.
Oh, you know, one last question. Did it ever bother you when Drake said, I guess after you and Wayne had the situation, Drake said, tell Uncle Luke I'm out in Miami too?
No, it ain't bother me because I didn't take it as a diss, because if he did diss me, he would be barred from Miami. Oh, yeah. He'd have got touched up.
You still getting people touched up?
Well, I don't have to do it.
Yeah, you know,
you get a lot of love in Miami.
Let me tell you, the difference between now and then, if you dissed one guy, you dissed that whole city.
Gotcha.
And you dissed his whole crew. You feel me? And so that's why I'm like sitting there, you know, the whole city of Philly, you should not be able to go there. You know, and your whole crew, Maybach Music, should be making diss records right now. So, you know, that's how it was before. I don't know. There's new stuff here.
Who you think winning that beef right now?
Oh, no. Don't have me handicap that one. It's like not good right now. You know the score. I mean, you're a Cowboy fan. We got beat like a drum.
Yeah, I think the series is over. I think it's 4-1 Drake.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's rough.
It is rough. I don't know. It's rough. You just, I guess.
It was interesting after you and Wayne got into it, though, because then the cars started getting blown up and they.
I didn't have nothing to do with
stop
that.
Stop trying to incriminate Luke with that. Don't put him in the middle.
I'm not into violence.
Yeah.
I'm a nice guy. You know, I'm a nice guy.
Absolutely. Nice guy with a bad temper.
Yeah. It's the Breakfast Club. It's Uncle Luke.
Uncle Luke.
Hey, baby.